Consumer Focus with Martin Newman.
Hello and welcome to Consumer Focus, bringing you expert advice and opinion, customer service and customer experience across all consumer sectors in the UK. My name is Martin Newman, and having worked in commerce for more than 35 years and being dedicated to championing the consumer and helping businesses to develop the best possible strategies for their customers. Today, I have the privilege of being joined by Guy Orlov. Guy is a hearing impairment activist and owner of Seeseeker, which is a specialist educational communication support service that offers deaf awareness training and one-to-one mentoring of people with hearing difficulties. Guy is here with us today to discuss his thoughts and feelings about his experiences on our high street, not only as a person who is hearing impaired, but also someone who is using British Sign Language. Guy, thank you very much for joining me. And just to point out that today we have the lovely Natasha, who is interpreting for Guy. So, Guy, can you tell us what having a hearing impairment actually means? What's the formal definition of that in the UK?
Well, for me, I obviously prefer to be referred to as deaf because I'm a BSL user. But obviously, people do see themselves as hearing impaired. Uh-huh. Obviously, that's a thinking about jargon and the language you use as well. But deaf people who identify as BSL users and very much part of the deaf community and part of deaf culture. So it's thinking about the language we use as well. So there's lots of definitions of deafness, hearing impairment.
Because my daughter Saskia, my 18-year-old daughter, is hearing impaired. I mean, she's basically deaf in one ear. So we have an empathy. We have something in common.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Thank you. Tell me something. How many people in the UK have hearing impairments? What are we talking about in terms of numbers?
Well, you'll be surprised. It's actually 12 million in the UK.
Wow.
But that's, you know, from infant to old age.
Yeah.
So that can vary from losing your hearing in a crash or an accident, or, you know, gradually using your hearing as you get older.
Yeah.
So if you think about deaf people who are British Sign Language users, then you're looking at a minority. There's about 250,000 BSL users. So that will vary.
That's still a significant number of people for sure. Tell me, do you think that people working in customer service are adequately trained in deaf awareness and how to deal with deaf customers?
I think it really depends on the organisation and their health and safety policies.
Yeah.
For example, I know in Manchester Airport, for example, there's a deaf man who's 21. He has a cochlear implant, similar to hearing aids, but a cochlear implant. And he uses speech. He works there and it's fantastic customer services. But he asked his manager if he could be promoted. But unfortunately, the manager pointed out there was a risk because of health and safety policies. So he couldn't necessarily step up the ladder because of that.
Right.
So you have to think about laws and health and safety policies within specific areas. But I think the problem is that there's not enough training for people working in business. So there's no funding for that kind of deaf awareness training. And I feel that lots of companies need refreshers as well. So perhaps they have a session on deaf awareness, but then I think it's really important to then have refreshers on a yearly basis because, you know, of new people, new staff coming in. So that has to be thought about as well.
Absolutely, because there's quite a churn in retail and other consumer sectors where, you know, often staff are quite transient. There's a lot of temporary workforce, etc. So you're absolutely right. So it should really be part of the induction programme for people that are coming into consumer-facing businesses where they're going to actually be in frontline positions dealing with customers who are deaf and have other hearing impairments, I would have thought.
So perhaps you have a small business, and you don't necessarily have funding to pay for that training. Yeah. But obviously with bigger companies, they do have that funding, that do have that budget.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important for them to really thinking about that.
Yeah.
One company, for example, Eat, they have their own HR, and the HR department is responsible for deaf awareness training, which is they'll have as part of their induction, they have deaf awareness training for staff members,
right?
Which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, that's good. So they're setting an example there, certainly within the food space, the food service space. What industries do you think offer the best and the worst training when it comes to dealing with customers who are deaf or hearing impaired?
I think it really depends, really. Are you looking more at the restaurant
kind of thing? Are you thinking
about hotels?
Yeah, I mean, do you think there's a difference across different sectors? You know, in your experience, you know, are retailers better at looking at this stuff than hotels, for example, or, you know, airlines? You know, is there a difference? I mean, do some of them deal with this more effectively than others?
I think hotels across the UK actually have really good customer services for deaf people.
Right. Okay.
I think it's because they have very good training for their staff, and they have to think about when deaf or disabled people are staying at their hotels, they have to think about health and safety. Mm-hmm. So they have to think about deaf awareness training.
Right.
And I think it's really important that they have that education.
Sure.
So, for example, in schools, from 11, deaf people may have interpreters, but they're not necessarily qualified interpreters. So they may have level one or level two sign language, which means, you know, their standard of BSL is a lot higher than the actual interpreter that they're working with. So which means they're not having the standard that they should be having to access.
Yeah.
And that's because they don't have the money to pay for qualified interpreters.
Yeah.
That's not there. So you're looking at people who are level one, level two BSL.
Right. Yeah.
Communicating for deaf people in education.
Yeah.
And the problem is they don't have money to pay for qualified interpreters who are level six or postgraduates or have university degrees. And that's a real big issue when you think about education for deaf people.
Indeed. You know, I think even, you know, if I were a consumer facing business, given what you said earlier, I think you said there were 12 million people, did you say, in the UK? That have, you know, hearing impairment, obviously to different levels, from being completely deaf, you know, to just, you know, their hearing having deteriorated over time. That's a lot of people, you know. That's almost a fifth of the population of the United Kingdom. So if I were owning a consumer facing business today, you know, I'd take that pretty seriously, because, you know, apart from the fact I think it's the right thing to do in order to make sure that all people who are facing the public and facing consumers on a day-to-day basis are trained adequately, but it has a commercial impact as well. So if you just want to look at it in that sense, if you're not able to deal effectively with people who are deaf and hearing impaired, then clearly that's got a, it's got, you know, it's fundamentally going to be an issue for your business, even at a commercial level, which is not really what we're talking about right now, but it certainly could have that implication. Is it up to the stores, do you think, when we're talking about retailers, is it up to the stores or the wider society to educate people about how to interact and talk about deaf and hearing impaired customers? Where does the responsibility sit, do you think?
I think that's a really interesting question, because I think it really depends. I think most importantly, it's thinking about the media, social media as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, for example, TV, theatre, film, having deaf actors as role models, so the wider public see deaf people on the screen. And I think that's really, really powerful. And that changes people's attitudes, society's attitudes towards deaf people, showing that they can be actors, for example.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's thinking about retailers, when they have a deaf customer, they need to think about other communication methods, pen, paper, writing things down on your text or an iPad to communicate. There's lots of different ways to communicate with deaf consumers. And I think the retailers need to think about that. So just be open-minded about that.
Yeah. And whilst it might be unreasonable to expect a retailer to have every single person in their employee or in the front line, you know, trained on BSL and British Sign Language, you know, surely they could have one person, you know, so that every day there was somebody in the store that when a completely deaf person came in, there was somebody in the store that was capable of using sign language to a level where they could engage with them effectively.
Think that would definitely support deaf people. That's definitely a way of thinking about it. And I think what's really important is the organisation need to think about changes, you know, within the organisation.
Yeah.
So they're going to benefit their customers, their deaf customers. Exactly. You know, people are going into their shops to buy things.
Yeah.
So I think it's really thinking about the organisation's strategies as well. Yeah. Or even thinking about employing deaf people as part of their team.
Great point.
And I think that's really, really important.
Absolutely.
And that changes behaviours.
Changes the mindset.
And changes attitudes within that organisation, which I think is vital.
Great point. Just on that point, you might not have any insight on this, I'm not sure, but I'll ask the question anyway. You know, do deaf people generally struggle to get into retail jobs? Do you know, is that something that is an issue because of their hearing impairment, because of their deafness, and the implications of that in terms of health and safety? Or is it more of a cultural issue? Is it more of a kind of lack of understanding on the part of those consumer-facing businesses?
I think it links to culture, personally. People need to think about the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So in Birmingham, where I'm based, on the high street there, New Street.
Yep.
I won't say the name of the shop, but there's a local shop there.
Yeah.
And if you want to go and buy something in there, the staff, for example, if I use my phone to write something to show them, for them to look at, I realise they don't really know how to interact with deaf people.
Right.
And they'll almost look at me, you know, quite bemused by what I'm asking, even though I'm just using my phone to try and communicate with them.
Well,
it's those kind of attitudes that are really, really difficult.
Terrible.
So I think the female staff are actually a lot more open to communicating, whereas the male staff in this specific shop, they find it really challenging to communicate with me as a deaf person.
Well, even although you don't want to call them out now on the podcast, I'm going to ask you who this is afterwards, because I definitely want to know, and I might take up the conversation directly with that particular brand, okay? So we'll have that conversation afterwards, because I don't think that's acceptable. Have you had any experiences yourself that really stick out as something where the staff could have been better prepared to interact with you? Maybe it relates to the conversation we just had there in that particular store in Birmingham. But are there any other examples where they could have just done a better job of giving you the best possible experience?
I think not necessarily in Britain, but in America, for example, in San Francisco, they have a deaf restaurant called Moseria.
Uh-huh.
And within this space, they have full sign language using staff.
Right.
They also have pen and paper that people can write on if needs be. But if you go in there, it's a real revelation, actually, because all the staff are sign language users.
Yeah.
The strategies they have are fantastic, actually. Obviously, they're all sign language users. But it's thinking about influencing people's attitudes.
I think that's
so they have deaf awareness.
Yeah.
You know, people just go into the restaurant and immediately they're in a deaf environment in which they're surrounded by people who use sign language. So it's open to all, hearing people and deaf people. And the food is fantastic. Also, it's just thinking about, from that point, they're influencing and making changes to people's attitudes towards deaf people.
Fantastic.
And
what
showing that deaf
idea.
People can.
What a great example. What a great example that other businesses over here could learn from. I love the idea of, you know, it being an environment that's essentially set up for deaf and hearing impaired people and customers, but fundamentally it's open to everyone, and therefore it acts as something that drives that change in mindset, if you like, and culture. And there's no reason why that can't happen over here. And there's no reason why, in my opinion, you know, all consumer-facing businesses shouldn't actually be doing something about this and shouldn't be taking this seriously and thinking about how to cater, you know, in a more proactive way for hearing impaired and deaf customers.
I think the biggest problem at the moment is there's just not enough training. So for training for deaf people, per se, for them to become trainers, for them to then train other people, for example, staff within an organisation, rather than, you know, you don't want to be tokenistic. When you're employing a deaf person. But I think it's really important that deaf people have that training and education so they can finish college and then they can go and find a job. You know, because a lot of deaf people go out to the workforce and actually they're rejected because of their deafness. And that really affects their self-esteem, their confidence and motivation.
You see, for me, that's about inclusion. And what I'm sort of, I guess, moving towards here. I mean, I'm trying to be a force for positive change. And I think that the gap here is that consumer-facing businesses are not only not doing enough when it comes to thinking about how do we ensure we're able to serve and cater for the needs of all of our customers, and that includes deaf customers and those with hearing impairments, but also, you know, how do we become inclusive in terms of making sure that we are in an environment where deaf and hearing impaired employees can come and work? And it's just not good enough, quite frankly, in this day and age, you know, for consumer-facing businesses across the board not to really be addressing that.
I think what's really important is, for example, doing shadowing, so work shadowing. So I think there's two options, for example, if you've got a hearing staff member goes to a deaf cafe, they obviously see what it's like to be in a deaf environment as a hearing person. So they understand, you know, the idea of deaf culture and deaf community. I think that's really, really important for them to learn how deaf people work and the sign language that they use. So I think it's really important to think about shadowing. So for hearing people to have an experience of being in a deaf environment. And I think the other example of that is a deaf person going to into a hearing environment and them shadowing. So seeing how a hearing environment works and how they make adjustments to work within a hearing space. And also it's thinking about communicating in both ways. So it's for a hearing person to understand deaf culture and sign language and communication with a deaf person or being in a deaf environment. And it's also for the for a deaf person to go into a hearing environment and understand what that's about. So I think there's two examples of shadowing. And I think it's all about trial and error. And also for shops and retailers to think about, you know, how can they be accessible and what changes do they need to make?
Guy, as a father with a daughter who is deaf in one ear, and obviously yourself being completely deaf, I just wonder, you know, what advice and thoughts you have on what retailers could do in terms of providing, or not just retailers, restaurants and other consumer-facing businesses, in terms of providing an environment for kids who are deaf or hearing impaired. You know, what can they do to create a better environment? You know, for example, I had the privilege of being on the board of White Stuff for 4 years. White Stuff has a play area in all of the stores for kids. So if you're going in there as parents with your kids and you want your kids to be occupied for, you know, half an hour to give you a chance to try on some clothes, then you can do that. So I'm just wondering, is there something like that or any ideas you have that you think consumer-facing businesses could implement in order to more effectively provide engaging environments for families with, you know, deaf kids?
I mean, possibly some, you know, iPads to keep them busy. For example, like the play toy room that you mentioned. I just think maybe games or activities. I think it would be important for staff members to perhaps have some training in sign language. Or just thinking about you know, basic finger spelling or using gesture to communicate with deaf children. Mm. I suppose it's just thinking outside of the box.
Even just some basic welcome signs within BSL that you, those kids could identify. Just out of curiosity, because I really don't know, and I feel embarrassed to admit this, but at what age generally would children learn British Sign Language? Because I know my daughter can sign to a certain level. What age would you say in general you would be able to sign as a kid?
It really depends, really. Yeah. I mean, the most important thing is to start an early age.
Yeah.
The National Deaf Children's Society, they've got lots of information mm-hmm. on that. But I think it also depends on the child, the individual child, the parents, and when the child is diagnosed with the deafness. So perhaps the parents, they need to think about sign language and how they communicate with their deaf child. Yeah. And I think the earlier, the better.
Yeah.
Some children may grow up bilingual, so they have British Sign Language, but they also have English speaking.
Yeah.
And they may use hearing aids or cochlear implants.
Yeah.
So I just think the most important thing is early diagnosis for a child.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if there's an early diagnosis, then communication and language can be started from a very early age. So the earlier, the better, really.
Okay. And to that point then, that if it was part of the training in a retail store and a restaurant and other environments where, for example, all the staff were taught some very basic welcoming sign language, wouldn't that be great for not only the kids in those environments that were deaf, but also the adults, just to make them feel, you know, a bit more at home and that they're in, you know, an environment that understands them and is there to cater for them?
Yes and no. I think big organisations will pay for level one, level two sign language.
Yeah.
And obviously it's more of a GCSE qualification, for example.
Yeah.
But the cost of that is not cheap. It's quite expensive. So if you want to have sign language at a higher level, then that obviously costs even more. So I think you're looking at level one, level two, you're looking at, you know, a six-week course.
What I was really thinking is, you know, for example, in the UK, we have a tendency not to be that great at learning other languages. So when we go abroad, we always expect everyone to speak English, which is obviously not the case. And, you know, I always feel that, for example, when I go to Spain or I go to Germany or I go to France, even if I can only speak a little bit of pidgin French, Spanish or German, but enough to just some of the basic niceties around welcoming somebody, saying hello, you know, asking for help, whatever it happens to be, thanking them, you know, thanking them or just even gesturing, you know, to have a good evening or have a good night. You know, that goes some way to making them feel that at least I'm making an effort. And I suppose that's what I was thinking of. Maybe there could be some very, very basic, more welcoming parts of sign language that could be taught to staff that are working in consumer-facing environments so they could welcome you when you come in, even though they can't converse with you fluently because they haven't had level one or level two, but they're able to at least welcome you. Wouldn't that be a start?
Yeah, and I think there's so many resources out there. For example, YouTube, you can go on YouTube and it can teach you how to sign welcome or hello, thank you.
Yeah.
But I think that's, you know, there's simple things out there, methods that you can actually learn sign language, basic signs.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you want to go on a course and progress your sign language, then obviously that's also an option.
In a lot of travel environments like airports and on trains or buses, most of the announcements are overhead. And that must be really challenging for you as a deaf person or anybody else that's deaf or hearing impaired. What could those environments do more effectively to cater for you and to make sure that you're also being made aware of these announcements?
I think that's the worst part of everyday life for me as a deaf person.
Yeah.
Obviously, when they have visual announcements, that's a lot better.
Yeah.
But often with delays or cancellations, they're announced via audio.
Yeah.
So I will be sat on a train, for example, from Sheffield to Derby, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sat on the train and I then found out it was actually going to Manchester. but I was supposed to go to Derby.
Right.
But obviously, I didn't hear that
because
there was nothing announced visually, which is really frustrating, which meant I had to go all the way to Manchester and then go all the way back to Derby.
Right.
So these are just everyday life things that happen that we miss out on.
Yeah.
And I think that is thinking about technology and making improvements on that. Thinking about screens, having screens on every carriage that will have visual announcements for deaf people. You know, just simple things like that.
I suppose it's difficult because, you know, you just look like anybody else for that matter. So if I were working on the train, I wouldn't know that you were deaf. Because I was just trying to think whether or not there was another way of, you know, being able to, for example, leverage the staff that are on the train to go through the carriages to make sure that everyone knows and is aware of the announcements that were made, even if they don't have the digital technology available, that there was some way of them going through and telling, you know, making sure people knew, you know, the changes, just in case there were anybody with either visual or hearing impairments for that matter.
Yeah, I think staff need to be trained in that, but I think it's very, very difficult. For example, if I'm on a train and I see everybody get off and I think, well, why is everybody getting off? If I'm a little bit unsure, I'll always ask the person next to me within that situation.
Yeah.
But I think it would obviously be better if staff were trained in deaf awareness and thinking about communication with their deaf consumers.
Just as a sidestep, I felt like a bit of an idiot yesterday. I was sitting at Highbury in Islington on the platform. And I had my little Apple Buds in, listening to my music, and this older gentleman came and actually tapped me on the shoulder, and I was like, "What does he want?" You know, that way I was in my own bubble, and he actually told me there had been an announcement made that they were going to close the platform and everybody had to go to Finsbury Park to get on trains going to Wellingarden City. You know, which is the direction that I was going in. And I would have been none the wiser had this gentleman not been courteous enough to tell me what was going on, because I was too busy and wrapped up in my own little bubble.
I think that's lovely, actually, because he could see visually that you weren't listening.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you had your ear pods in.
Exactly.
But I think some people, deaf people who have hearing aids, then that can be, they can be recognised
as deaf. Because there's something visual there.
Yeah, it's a visual cue. And also, maybe a deaf person's having a conversation with another deaf person in sign language.
Yeah.
So perhaps that a hearing person may say, "Oh, actually, they're deaf. I'll let them know."
Yeah.
But if you don't have those cues, those visual cues, how would the public know?
So this is something a little bit left of centre, right? How about you design something, a little badge or something that you wear as a deaf person, that every single travel operator is made aware of, and their staff are trained in to know that when you wear this badge, and it could be something that could look quite, you know, quite trendy. It doesn't have to be something that looks, you know, obvious to anybody else, but that made them aware of the fact that you were hearing impaired or deaf. And therefore, when they were giving out the announcements, they were trained to look for this when they were walking up and down the carriages or in another environment.
I don't know. I just think that idea of having a label as being deaf, you know,
like, and
that,
I know, you know, and I was thinking
the meaning of that. And
so I was thinking of that, and I appreciate, I totally get that.
I suppose it's thinking about marketing. I think perhaps thinking about sign language user friendly. So you have to think about the language you use, because some staff, if they had a label saying "I'm a deaf staff member," I don't know. Maybe the public would not necessarily want to communicate with them because they see this label deafness and they have negative connections to that. So
I understand. And I was thinking about that as an idea, you know, I was completely thinking about the fact that you would feel uncomfortable probably with having some kind of label, but I was only thinking that you would wear it potentially in that environment, and that would then provide the opportunity for the staff there to know, to be able to communicate with you to make sure you're made aware of any changes. That's all. But I completely understand, you know, your just sort of general discomfort with the idea of, you know, being singled out as somebody who's different.
So think about Euston Station. Mm-hmm. If you go there, they have an accessible room, which means deaf or wheelchair users can go to that room.
Right.
And if they need any support with communication, information, like what times trains are, cancellations, or mobility needs, then they can go to the specific point within Euston to get support. So I think that's fantastic access for deaf or disabled people, rather than having a label to point you out.
How about that as a deaf customer, for example, if you were booking a ticket on the train line, you were able to click a button so they knew that you were deaf and they assigned you a seat on a specific carriage that their staff were able to identify you as a deaf person. So no label, no badges, nothing else other than the knowledge that because you're in that seat, the chances are you are likely to be a deaf person. Wouldn't that be a way that they could possibly then, you know, connect with you
more effectively? Yeah, I like that idea, actually. I think that's a really good idea. Yeah. We have a card which is green.
Yeah.
I'll just show it to you. And it's a disabled person's rail card. So you get discounts for train journeys. And that's for deaf or disabled people to use. Actually, when you do book train tickets, there's nothing to identify that you're deaf or disabled at the moment. Even though you have disabled rail card to book those tickets. So, yeah, I think an option to show that would be great.
That would not be a difficult thing for them to implement at all, I don't believe. And I think that would be a great way of tackling that particular issue. And it would certainly work on, you know, because when you go on an airplane, the airplane has a manifest, so they know who all the customers are. And if you travel in business, if you're fortunate enough to travel in business class, you're always sort of singled out by the cabin services director, who knows your name because they've got a list of all the people sitting there. So there's no reason why they couldn't do the same thing for anybody sitting in economy or any other part of the plane. And the same thing goes for trains. There's no reason why you couldn't book a specific seat that would then be identified with as being hearing impaired or deaf.
I have an interesting story about two deaf people who were travelling to Australia. So they travelled from London, they stopped in Hong Kong. When they got to Hong Kong, they were obviously flying on to Australia. But when they had the change, the staff realised that they were deaf and they were told that they had to wear like a high-vis vest.
Oh, really?
To say that they were disabled.
Oh my goodness.
From their journey from Hong Kong to Australia, they had to wear these high-vis vests. But it was really interesting.
Well, that's absolutely atrocious.
You know, in Hong Kong, how they see disability and deafness is very, very different.
Yeah, well, I'm going to ask you about that offline as well. I've travelled to Australia 20 times and the chances are I've been on that airline and I've actually got an instinct about who it might be. So I'm going to ask you in a minute. All right. And I'm going to call them out separately. Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything. I just wonder, are there any other takeaways that you would like to give to, you know, to either to retailers or other consumer facing businesses that are listening today? Anything else in terms of advice, in terms of actions you'd like them to take off the back of today's podcast, Guy?
I think the most important thing is not to have the fear, not to be fearful of deaf people or consumers.
Yeah.
And I just think, thinking about the National Deaf Children's Society, which is based in London, that's kind of more focused on children with deafness. And there's other organisations such as Action on Hearing Loss, which is more focused on adults, but they're fantastic at campaigning for deaf people and deaf children. So I think they're fantastic in giving advice and support to any retailers that may need that.
Listen, you know, I think for anyone listening today, you know, having a purpose as a brand, in my opinion, is massively important. And, you know, you can't really get much more of a purpose than being an inclusive business and providing an environment that really any consumer can engage with you in, irrespective of who they are, their ethnicity, their sexuality, their demographics, or any other form of disability that they happen to have, whether they're deaf, whether they're hearing impaired, you know, whether they're in a wheelchair. You know, it's 2019, people, and we need to do something about this. Guy, I'm very grateful to you for coming in today, and I'm very grateful to Natasha for interpreting. So thank you so much for your time. Thank you for listening, everyone, to Consumer Focus. My name is Martin Newman, and look forward to my next podcast.